¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN at 92.5. So, Jack Easterby, Executive VP, fired by Cal McNair. Cool cat Cal just gets it, doesn't he? Former Houston Texan players. Former Houston Texan players sounding off on Jack Easterby. Remember Jalen Strong? Was he a second rounder from Arizona State?
Yep.
Is it fair to say that that was a miss? I say that tongue in cheek. I know that that was a miss. Yep. I'm trying to look up to see if he was a second rounder.
Didn't the Niners pick him up after that? The Niners gave him a chance after that and it didn't work out?
Jacksonville.
Oh, okay, that's right. Yep.
Jacksonville. Third rounder. Still a miss. Still a big miss, but not as bad a miss as a second. Well, it was still pretty close. He said about Jack Easterby and the Houston Texans after firing Jack Easterby, "Watch how quickly things turn around in Houston. This guy was the start of the Texans' downfall, maybe made OB believe he could be a great GM."
That's just, it's so unfortunate that it's believable.
I wonder why, like, Jalen Strong has beef with Jack Easterby, though. Jalen Strong was let go in 2017.
I didn't know that until you said that. I didn't know that they even, like, crossed paths or came close.
They didn't. Well, then Jalen Strong was gone in 17 and Easterby got brought in 19. The only thing that I could see here is that Jalen Strong, like, either had, like, friends
relationships
with the team,
in the locker room,
or maybe he was an OB guy. Maybe he liked OB and is defending OB for Jack Easterby screwing up the whole organization.
Maybe one way or the other, but I'd like to hear from more of the last couple of years version of Texans players that have more commentary to tell us. Because some way or another, we're going to find out at least bits and pieces of what really happened and went on behind the scenes. Because it's hard to believe this guy was the interim general manager at one point. It's hard to believe that this guy elevated himself and played so many people so many different ways to get the overall outcome that allowed him to survive for this long. It's just amazing to me that it took, like, to our conversation yesterday. It's amazing, on one hand, to say it took this long, but to find out all the conniving ways that he was able to survive and thrive is just, it shouldn't happen in today's day and age in professional sports with the savvy people that are supposed to be making decisions.
Yeah. JWC on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, he said that ESPN yesterday was saying Jack was a mutual agreement. Jack went to the Texans and asked for his contract to be bought out. John McClain was reporting on this too. Like, the mutual agreement was probably how much they were going to pay of his contract the rest of the way. But John McClain said the Texans fired Jack Easterby. So I don't think this was a whole Jack Easterby went to Cal McNair and was like, "Hey, let's get out of this contract." In fact, I think it was the opposite. I think Jack Easterby was probably, like, trying to find a life preserver some way, somehow, and was meddling in some things, trying to stay with the Texans for more than just this year, because we had heard that he was going to be gone after this year anyways. This was Cal firing him, and then they came to terms on what the buyout was going to be.
It's a no-brainer that, you know, in these situations, to kind of be able to control as much as you can control, how much money is it going to take for you to peacefully and quietly walk away so that you don't do the expose with the magazine or publication of your choice and tell your side of the story and really air it out?
That's coming anyways.
And give far too much detail and information. I think more so you'll see the opposite. You'll see it from the opposite side of the story. I think you're going to see more players come out and more people that were in the inner sanctuary of NRG tell you what they knew of Jack Easterby than you are Jack Easterby in a tell-all to get it all. Because Jack Easterby wants another job. If Jack Easterby goes out and does that, he's going to give himself even less of a chance to find a job in the NFL and lesser of a chance to find a job in football.
I'll be honest with you. I only think there's one team that would hire Jack Easterby. And I honestly think this one team's even an extreme, absolute long shot. Because no one's going to hire Jack Easterby that doesn't have a great infrastructure already in place.
Like New England's that's not going to hire him again.
New England's the only one that has a chance, but I also agree with you. I think New England's the only team in the NFL that would entertain the idea of hiring Jack Easterby, but the way that he left and then all of the people that he bothered on his departure is why I say even that is not going to happen.
Belichick doesn't like snitches, and he doesn't like connivers, and he doesn't like guys that betray him. And he wants, unless the job is just too good, like, you know, in the case of his two coordinators in the last several years that got head coaching jobs, he understands that. But you take a guy that he was adamant about saying, Jack Easterby did a lot of good for us, but let me be clear, not on the football side.
And I think he was okay with, like, Easterby leaving if he was trying to pursue, like, general manager jobs. But the shadiness of how he went about it and then the whole, like, flirting with Nick Caserio.
The first time.
And they fired the tampering charges as well. And, like, the Texans were interested in Caserio even before they brought in Easterby. But there were two separate times, after that. There was three times in all. Two of them had Easterby. That's why even that, I think, is, like, less than a 1% chance. But even though it's a less than a 1% chance, they're the only NFL team that would even think about it.
Right, I agree. And I don't think it's going to happen because I don't think Belichick likes guys that, you know, come back to the well after they did it the way that he did it to try and get where he was trying to get to. I think the more interesting thing that would be, again, as these truth serums get poured out and people start talking about their experiences in the Texans organization under Jack Easterby, you know, reign, I think J.J. Watt would be just the absolute room shaker because J.J. Watt's the guy that could tell you about, you know, Jack getting Bill O'Brien fired because J.J. was obviously not a Bill O'Brien guy at the end, and then talk about after Bill left and what Jack was capable of doing. Jamie Roots would have been a guy that would have been real interesting to talk to because Jamie Roots was at wit's end with anybody that was Bill O'Brien or Bill O'Brien-esque, and there was no doubt that they had issues with, with Jack Easterby.
It might be the best one because, like, it's the hierarchy, but not the football side. And Easterby, while he did have a tenure as the Texans, like part of their GM parliament type of thing, probably was involved in more things outside of football, business relations, things like
Without Jack Easterby remaining after Bill O'Brien was fired, Jamie Roots would still be a member of the Houston Texans organization today.
I can't disagree with that. Easterby, since that Texans announcement came out announcing the parting of ways with Jack Easterby, has since retweeted Buzz Williams. He has retweeted Tony Dungy. He has retweeted John Gordon, who is a best-selling author, Energy Bus, that type of thing. But he did issue a statement on Twitter, Jack Easterby did. My family and I are thankful for our time in Houston. We appreciate the opportunities the McNair family has provided us and wish the organization well moving forward. It's good of Easterby to take the high road on his way out the door.
I'm surprised.
I say that tongue-in-cheek. Chill out.
I'm surprised he didn't say something that quoted Dr. Seuss again on his way out the door, like one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish.
I'm sad that we're not going to get a whole lot of that anymore.
That
was my favorite thing about Easterby. Former Texans.
It was the most bizarre thing. You know how many people thought that was a stand-up comedy routine? They didn't realize that he was speaking at a church?
Yeah. I mean,
it came across so corny.
It was corny. It was corny. Former Texans cornerback Gary and Conley, who did cross paths with Easterby.
Yep.
In fact, they didn't pick up his fifth-year option. Conley decided to post his feelings on Twitter. Quote, about time they got rid of Buddy at the Texans, the 27-year-old free agent cornerback tweeted, along with the prayer hands emoji. We saw DeAndre Hopkins. He didn't like put anything on Twitter, but he posted a laughing emoji to the news. I think it was on Bleacher Report. I think he put something on Andre Johnson's thing, too. And then Andre Johnson, he didn't like say anything, but he put fan posts on his Insta story that were like, happy with the move that Easterby's gone. Bring back Andre.
It validates what Andre had said when he said what he said.
Which we believed him then.
Yeah, we believed him then. We believe him more now. And there's more validation to everybody else that got on the bandwagon to say, this dude is cancer for an organization, specifically for this organization, and he needs to go.
Yeah, he needed to go a long time ago. 8924, who would even believe that bad word if he wrote a tell-all book anyways? I don't think that we would. I don't think that anybody would trust Jack Easterby again.
Although you could kind of highlight his entire life story of being like the criminal Forrest Gump, not criminal, but the shady Forrest Gump that got all these different places and did all these different things with not a single thing on his resume that said he should have.
How I conned a multi-billion dollar corporation.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Pretty much.
Which, I saw John McClain tweet this yesterday, that this was the best move in Houston sports history, which this is kind of what we were talking about yesterday. This is the kind of thing that annoys me. Yep. Like, like you hired a dude that was unqualified for the position. You promoted and empowered the dude that was unqualified for the position. And then you kept that dude for 2.5 years too long. That disqualifies you from the greatest move in Houston history. Like, that's the kind of crap that annoyed me yesterday. That was like, I couldn't stand reading that sort of thing.
But that's a guy who has hitched his wagon to Cal over the years and got shoved out a little bit from his tight circle with Cal because of Jack.
Right.
To where he's kind of, yeah, over-celebrating.
Greatest move in Houston sports history because he fired the dude that was so bad that he hired. That's like taking a robber to a bank, handing him the weapon, handing him the bag that you're going to collect the money, and then driving the getaway car. And then when you turn him into police, oh, what a job. That was outstanding. What a job that you did. You're an honorable man.
Brendan,
while you go to jail too.
Key from L.A. said it would be the next version of Catch Me If You Can. It's pretty good.
Well, yeah, it's amazing. I am very curious, though, the next job that Jack Easterby has. I think it'll be in college, which is scary, too.
I agree.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. ALDS Game 3. Let's go back over the weekend a little bit. Does it make you feel better watching your pitching staff throw 18 shutout innings, or is it worse that it took 18 innings to score one run? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. I'm always a very forgiving man. I can have a drink with anybody. If Jack Easterby wants to have a drink on his way out of town, happy to do it, Jack, but it's got to be Gentle Ben. It could be vodka, it could be gin, it could be bourbon, whatever you want, Jack. I love them all. They're all part of the rotation for me, and Gentle Ben does it better than anyone else. Gentle Ben, a line of ultra-premium Texas spirits. They use their state-of-the-art, innovative, Presedo craft technology that's better in purity, aroma, and taste than your favorite brand of vodka, gin, or bourbon. Purification of Gentle Ben is unrivaled. You'll love what's not in it. Try a sip of Gentle Ben, compare it to your brand. You're going to taste the huge difference that I did when Ricky Ford, owner of Gentle Ben Spirits, A&M class of 85, by the way, had me out to the tasting room in Alvin to see what I thought, and ever since then, I've been a Gentle Ben man. It is smooth, clean, eliminates the burn. Enjoy your drink. Don't work through your drink. You can find Gentle Ben Vodka and Gin at Total Wine and Specs, also online at gentleben.com. Are you headed to the Rockets game, their home opener on Friday? Stop by the Gentle Ben Bar on the main concourse inside the Toyota Center. Are you looking for a great place to host your private party, private event? Tasting Room in Alvin, the perfect spot to do that. Enjoy some great cocktails, great spirits, and a beautiful venue out in Alvin. Sit back with good company and raise a glass of the very best, Gentle Ben.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, the Astros, we're going to go back a couple days here. Saturday, of course, you had the 18-inning game. The Astros win that game 1-0. History in that game, it tied the longest playoff game. Only four times it's happened. Astros have won two of those. You score the one run. It was the longest Major League Baseball playoff game as well that went nothing as deep as it did. Which of the two is truer to you? Does it make you feel better watching your pitching staff put together 18 shutout innings, or is it worse that it took 18 innings to score one run?
No, I think the old adage is always good pitching can beat good hitting, or good pitching beats good hitting every time.
Do you believe that?
I don't believe every time. That's why I was careful in the way I worded it, because I think
I kind of believe it.
I think good pitching has the ability. And again, you think about the best hitters in baseball only succeed 3 out of 10 times. I think it was more just kind of celebrating what the pitching staff was able to do, because we know how deep they've been all year. We know what their starting pitchers have, but we continued to just look at the bullpen to try and figure out who was going to make it, who wasn't, how they were going to be used. And we wanted to believe everything that we said about, hey, whatever you do, your bullpen gets better because you take guys that have been good starters and put them in the pen, but you just didn't know if they were capable of making that move from the time that took to get ready to being able to be as effective. You come out of this series and you say, Garcia was the glowing, shining star of stars, to where you can't wait to see him pitch again and you don't have to worry about anything regular season. Then you look at Hunter Brown and got his feet wet and got into the playoffs and got guys out. And you go up and down the list and you say, the fact that it was do or die time every time a pitcher took the mound, starting with the 10th inning too, and the fact that you didn't have a chance to match them offensively. If you gave it up, it was over, and everybody did their job. That's what I will always remember about that game.
I take the 18 shutout innings over the one run in 18 innings as well. I don't know if this is a hot take or not, and that we agree on, it's kind of scary. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. A few things to point to. One, I think you have to take the series in its entirety. You scored 8 runs in game one when you were down by 4 runs on 3 different instances. That encourages me about the offense. You got to Seattle for 4 runs when they had their ace in Luis Castillo on the mound. Now, a lot of this damage was done by Yordan Alvarez. You don't want it to be so top-heavy. You'd like to see more balance top to bottom. I understand that. And you saw more balance in game one than you did game two or game three. And look, you score one run in 18 innings, you don't love that production, obviously. You'd love to have way more production. But shutting out a team for 18 innings is so special, for a lack of a better word, that I can overlook the one run over 18 innings. Not to say that that's a positive by any stretch of the imagination. There was also some extreme circumstances at play in that game. I don't know where you stand on the whole, like, smoke. I don't give that a whole lot of credit, really, to be honest. But the shadows at that game, when you had the roof open, you had the sunlight, you had the mound in the sun, you had the catcher circle in the shade. Even when the shade covered the mound, you had the backdrop that was just full of sunlight. Yep. That is really difficult to hit a baseball.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think that you look at the combination of pitchers that you saw, from their ace who lived up to the billing for the most part, and you knew he was going to be a challenge coming in on full rest. You take Kirby, the young pitcher, who did everything he was supposed to do, lived up to billing, and then some, and solidified him as a guy that you're going to see for a long period of time in a Mariners uniform doing those kinds of things. And you realize this just wasn't just an average common pitching staff you were facing, and the pitchers that you faced were exactly where they should be in the playoffs to give you all that they could. And, you didn't come through and put up big crooked numbers all over, but at the end of the day, you did what was necessary to win the games. You matched what your opponent did until the time was right to put them out. You did that with Yordan in the first two games. You did it with Peña in the third game. And it doesn't matter how you got there, as long as you got there offensively. The bigger thing was you saw Lance McCullers in Lance McCullers form before he had the forearm injury. You saw Lance McCullers that was matching pitch for pitch, Kirby, and showed you it wasn't just going to be 5 innings with a super high pitch count where you dodged out of big innings. He was dominant. He was doing what he did and what you want to see him do the rest of the playoffs. That was a huge win for the Astros.
Do you put any weight on the smoke? The little, like,
the
whatever.
Haze in the outfield haze coming from the fires?
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't.
I don't either. I think that maybe, when the sun hits that, it could even be more of a detriment with the shadows.
I think it mattered a lot to the cameras.
For sure.
But whenever you saw, like, the first base or third base camera, it was clear.
Crystal
clear. So I don't think the hitters were influenced at all.
Now, Lisa and I were talking about that. I think it was just perception of the way the camera picked it up from center field. But you could see once you got into the infield and down where the action was happening, it was crystal clear, and it didn't seem like it was a hindrance to either team.
713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there now for Gary. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Gary?
Hey, thank you, guys. I like what the comments one of you guys just made about every pitcher that went out there, it was do or die. And yet, when Dusty Baker made those calls to run those pitchers out there, they had to perform. Mm-hmm. In the regular season or whatever, when he sent those same people up to the plate or pulls somebody and switches them out, they don't do their job. But fortunately, this game, for 18 innings, everybody did their job. But he's the same manager that called upon all of his players each time out, whether it's a preseason, regular season, or is it in the playoffs. It's just that when they don't perform, he shouldn't have put that guy in that spot. When they do perform, the players did their job. But yet, he makes those calls. And I don't hear his name enough.
Well, Gary, you didn't listen to our show then after game one
sure
and game
didn't.
Two. Because you're right, Gary. We've been critical of Dusty Baker throughout the regular season. And you can make the case that we were too critical of Dusty Baker for a silly old regular season that doesn't matter. Because once you get to the postseason, that's when it all matters. So I understand where you're coming from there, Gary. But we were talking about Dusty Baker after game one, how he managed his tail off. We were talking about game two, where it was overall good things
pushing
that Dusty
right
Baker
button.
Was doing. Yesterday, when we talked about Dusty Baker and his his handling of that bullpen, we said that it was a master class by Dusty Baker. One thing that I would also argue with you about, Gary, is that the Astros in the regular season didn't have the success when Dusty Baker put them in games. The Astros had the best ERA in all of the American League. They were more successful than any other team in the AL, so I disagree with that notion.
But who pushed them there?
Dusty did. We gave him all the credit after game one and game two.
Gary, we just told you we gave him credit.
No, I agree. You guys gave him all the credit. Okay. The last two, I've been listening to your show. But what I was just saying is that the ERA, whatever happened, like you said, when guys were critical of them, just like, I mean, what's his name, went 0-for-8. It's not his fault that the greatest player, the MVP, I think, it went 0-for-8.
Sure.
In critical baseball is one of those things that where you can really tear down. And guess what? I agree with everything you're saying, and likewise, you gave him praise. But like you say, for meaningless regular season games, when you got 2,000 regular season games, I called in once before and said, he trusts and believes in Yordan and all these guys, and that's his call. If they don't perform, we shellack him. And by the way, let me go. On the talk show in the morning, those guys were on Friday. They had a caller calling in just after we had won this series, already talking about a new coach. It's just a disrespect.
We just won this series. I hear you, Gary.
Appreciate it, Gary. Thanks for listening.
Look, there's a lot of good points there. Jim Crane has not extended Dusty Baker's contract.
But let me say this in response to what he was talking about with the bench, too. That's because Joe Espada got the Miami interview already, and he was scheduled to interview with somebody else. And the conversation is again going to come back up of, as you look at the long-term future of this team, is it Joe Espada's and you don't want to lose him?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you going to ride with Dusty Baker's short-term one or two more years?
I wouldn't lose any sleep if Joe Espada takes one of those jobs. There's 50 quality managers in the world. If Espada leaves, appreciate what you did here.
I think it kind of goes to Gary's point, too, that it's really about the players on the field executing whatever game plan it is where you're going to win and lose and live and die, as opposed to you can make all the moves in the world if you're Dusty. If your players do whatever they're called on to do, you always look like a hero if they succeed.
Yeah, like is the Astros bullpen ERA because Dusty always made the right move, or is it the fact that they have dude after dude after dude after dude? Look, you have to credit Dusty there. I get that. And look, I've been in a good place with Dusty for a couple months, and I think he's done really good so far in the playoffs. Hope it continues in the ALCS.
Couple months.
I've been fine with it. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. Also, look, he mentioned the 0-for-8. Gary did, our last caller. He talked about Altuve being 0-for-8. What is the concern level for the greatest Houston Astro ever? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Look, we were just talking about it. If the players succeed, the manager thrives, and you as a fan, if you bet on them to do what you think they're going to do, you can thrive as well and capitalize. Well, your favorite athletes always strive to push themselves in a winning position. You can do that with MyBookie.ag. MyBookie.ag has the biggest online selection of odds and contests to fill all your sports betting needs anytime, anywhere, any place. They're going to take care of you. You can bet on the NFL, these Major League Baseball playoffs we were talking about. Play for a share of a big cash prize in the weekly blackjack tournaments as well if you're not into sports betting, but you're into gambling. If you've been waiting for the right time to get in on the action, the time is now. This is the last week of the double your initial deposit bonus. Yep, the last week to capitalize. It's quick, it's easy, and for at least this week, you can get that double your next deposit. All you got to do is go to mybookie.ag and use the promo code BET975. Claim your double deposit match of any amount up to $1,000. For example, you put $250 in, you get $250 in, you get $500 in your account. So that means you have more money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances to win. When you win, they're going to pay you. And that's the other thing that you also have to realize. They take care of their customers by making sure they take care of you and treat you the right way. The promo code BET975. Claim your double deposit bonus. Experience sports in a whole new light. Make this season a winning season by going to MyBookie. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it, MyBookie.ag.
Furniture where low prices live.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Jose Altuve. How about Ofer Tuve? Ofer the series. How about that? How does Jose Altuve go Ofer the series? Ofer Tuve, and yet you sweep Seattle. A good place to be. Now, I don't know if you can have that type of success in the ALCS if Jose Altuve is producing nothing offensively, although he did have a walk and a run in game one. What is the concern level for Jose Altuve?
I mean, look at how many times people have basically thought this was the beginning of the end of Jose Altuve, and then even with all that he went through with the John Boy buzzer and, you know, all of the when it first started, all of the verbal that he faced on the road. He's come through time and time again. Why wouldn't he do it yet this time when he knows that he shines in the postseason? We've seen Springer do it, of all people. When Springer struggled mightily in the playoffs, found it in the World Series. The thing that you should be looking at this instead of questioning whether he can find it and do it again is the thing you should be looked at and be, look at it and be excited about is you didn't need him and you did what you did to sweep a good team in the Mariners. Now when you play the next round, you should assume the fact that this guy at the top of your lineup is going to continue to be who he's been for you his entire career, a steady force that has shown that he can make the transition from just being a more average-orientated hitter to a more power hitter. And then all of a sudden he ends up doing what he does in the leadoff spot, hitting all those leadoff home runs and getting the party started multiple times whenever you need him to do that. I have all the confidence in the world that 27 is going to be who he's always been for the Astros when this series starts, whoever they play.
Do you feel more confident in Jose Ofer Tuve today than you did at the start of the ALDS?
I don't think you could feel more confident, but I still always feel
equally confident.
I am always going to be a believer in Jose
Altuve. I am too, but I'm also not going to just completely sweep under the rug that he was over the series.
I don't think that's fair to do,
right? Like, no. I believe that Jose Altuve is going to have a productive ALCS. Don't get me wrong. But I was more confident that he would have a good ALDS than I am he'll have a good ALCS. There were some encouraging signs, I thought, in his last couple, maybe three at-bats in that 18-inning game. Like, he was starting to take a little bit more pitches. There was some more contact.
Wasn't as many pop-ups. He was hitting some lasers foul. The first couple at-bats in that game three were just straight up in the air.
He was getting under and popping it straight up in the air, or he was flailing at pitches that were nowhere near the zone. His last two, three at-bats, plate appearances, he was a little bit more selective. He looked a little bit more like the Jose Altuve. There was better contact in those at-bats. It didn't always translate to balls in play because he was pulling some of them, and he also had like a decently deep fly out to center field. So I did see some encouraging things about Jose Altuve, like in the final three at-bats, even though that he was hitless. But the fact that he did go hitless in the ALDS does bring in some concern.
There has to be some level of notice and concern for him doing it. But more so to my argument of why I would say I still believe in him is because this team won without him, and this team found someone they weren't really relying on in Yuli Gurriel because they weren't sure what they were going to get. And Yuli Gurriel did everything that we've always wanted and grown to love and know that Yuli Gurriel could do previously. We weren't sure we were going to get that this year. You got that at the absolute right time from the minute we called it a season and started the postseason, and he started fresh. He came out of the gates just raking, and that's what you got. So there's no reason to believe that Altuve can't do it too.
Sure.
And that he can find it, and there's even a higher ground you can achieve offensively with this team. Because we know, aside from a Pena home run and what I just said about Yuli, but the majority of all the damage was done by a one-man wrecking crew in games one and two.
I think that could give Altuve a little bit of like positive momentum. That sounds weird because he was hitless in the ALDS, but the fact that you sweep the series, you get the series sweep, you come home to Houston, and you didn't perform at all offensively, I think is going to lighten the load a little bit for Jose Altuve. I know that sounds weird. He was interviewed in Seattle after the game, like when they were doing their celebrations, they were taking a team picture there at Safeco, and they're like, somebody asked him, I couldn't tell
it's
who
T-Mobile.
It was. Is it T-Mobile? Yeah. Okay, I'm going to call it Safeco. They asked him about, you know, this is a series where you didn't get the results that you wanted. He, like, interrupted the question. He's like, what are you talking about? We just swept the series and was, like, laughing. Jose Altuve's in an 0-for-15 slump during the regular season. He's not laughing. So, like, that was kind of encouraging to me. The last 2 to 3 at-bats for Jose Altuve was encouraging for me. Here was Roger Clemens. Almost called him a Hall of Famer. Roger Clemens, one of the greatest pitchers of all time. He was on the bench earlier this week talking about the concern level of the greatest Houston Astro ever.
Everything's just a little bit on the outer part of the strike zone, and he's hacking at it, and, of course, you know, everybody, you know, with the high strike being called, when you feature that ball just one or two baseballs out of the strike zone in the top part of the strike zone, you know, guys are going to hack at it. I mean, it just looks so hittable. And when a ball is elevated like that, if you can just get your barrel on a piece of the ball and backspin it, it's going to go a long way somewhere. So, you know, I think, you know, that series over now. He can wipe the slate clean and be ready to go here on Wednesday afternoon, Wednesday night, ever who they're playing.
The Rocket. And I think that's what, you know, Jose Altuve is. I think that is the mentality. Hey, look, I was hitless, but we swept. I'm totally okay with that. Todd's saying Altuve would be fine. I would change nothing. The one thing that I would change, he's got to be a little bit more selective. He can't be flailing and breaking balls.
He has to take some pitches and settle in. I know that he wants to capitalize on that first pitch fastball, especially leading off a game, because that's what he's been known for, and he loves the fact that guys are still willing to challenge him. But when you're slumping and scuffling, that's basically the worst thing you can do, because, you know what, like Roger said, you can put it up in the zone, you can put it outside the zone, but he's chomping at the bit, and he's not
getting himself
keeping
out.
Balanced. Yes, he's not keeping balanced and focused on you know, the full at bat. I think the one thing that does people lose sight of, which is why he also probably laughed at the start of that, he might not have done it with his bat. He did it with his glove. He made plays defensively that made him a big part of this series, and they were game savers that could have been game changers. And the one thing that we noticed throughout the year was he struggled with his arm a little bit, yeah, and maybe some of his range.
Yeah.
He put a lot of that to bed with the plays that he made that helped them defensively.
I had a theory about that with Yuli, too, about the defense. Because, you know, the defensive metrics, we know, like, the, you know, analytical people, they look at it, and Yuli's analytical defensive metrics weren't very good this year compared to other years. Like, this is his first negative year that he's had in his entire big league career. My thought with that is, like, Yuli's a veteran, and I think Yuli knows, like, when to turn it on. Does Yuli at times, like, during the regular season, does he get a little bit lazy when they're up by 5 runs late in the game so he doesn't get to some balls that he normally would? I think that's what showed up with Yuli defensively throughout the regular season. Because watching him in the playoffs, it's like I would trust him more than any other first baseman defensively in all of the postseason.
I think you saw it, too, when he also got comfortable with the shift, knowing that he had backup behind him a lot of times until the one time he thought it was there and he didn't have the backup.
I'm not sure he got to that ball anyway.
I don't think so either. When I looked at the replay and I went back to look at it a couple times, I don't think so either. The announcers thought, I don't think even if he full out dove for it that he was going to get it. But I think that you do kind of realize and rationalize his defense by saying he got real comfortable too, knowing I've got real good defense behind me when facing left-handed hitters that help me. But I think overall, look, I believe in his scoops all along, but I think that as you get older in your career, you get deeper in thought when you have these struggles in your seasons. And that's why there's more questions about, will you snap out of it? Because you're analyzing it more, and you're also older, and that's a factor. But the fact that I firmly believe that when there was a ton of pressure that he was putting on himself, that everybody was putting on him because of how much he struggled in the regular season. When Roger said that from series to series, I think it's from regular season to playoffs. When the slate got cleaned and you didn't have to worry about whether he was going to get to 300 after winning a batting title or not,
right,
and he could just be himself again and get comfortable, he relaxed, he hit the baseball, he became his old self again.
You're talking about Yuli not out too big. See, I think that the 5 days also, like, let me address Yuli real quick as well. Yuli, look, he had a bad regular season. It's just what it is. He's the type of player, though, that kind of, like, his approach offensively plays in the postseason, where, like, he's going to put the ball in play. He's going to make sure that he's not striking out. Whereas, like, a Trey Mancini, who over 162 games might be a better regular season player, you trust Yuli more in an at-bat to get something done that's productive. As far as Altuve goes, I think that, like, we spent a lot of time talking about the 5 days rest. I don't think that there was one player hurt more negatively with the Astros with that 5-day layoff than Jose Altuve. He was on fire at the end of the regular season. 3-for-3 to get to 300. He finished like the last week and a half just absurd. And baseball being the repetition sport, Altuve, like you see in live pitching with his own guys, that's not the same. I think that five-day layoff really hurt Altuve.
I think it's a good point. And I think as it relates to what you said about Yuli, the other thing with Yuli is he didn't have to face the criticism of losing all of his power, not having the pop he once had. Because in this series, it kind of painted a perfect scenario for him.
You're not worried about OPS.
Right. What he was worried about at bat to at bat was if he just puts bat on baseball and got hits, he either started or continued rallies, or he did what he normally does, which is knock guys in and come up big and clutch when he needed to. And I think that's when Yuli can focus on what really means the most to him, which is just contact. Don't worry about trying to hit it out of the park.
Yep.
It'll come if you just barrel up baseballs. He barreled up baseballs in the Seattle series.
Dusty on Altuve. They were holding a workout over at Minute Maid Park a little bit ago. Mark Berman tweeted this out. Dusty on Altuve. I expect big things out of Altuve because he expects big things out of himself. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's get the thoughts in the wheelhouse. One of the wheelhousemen. What's their concern level for Altuve, and who do they want to see in the ALCS? Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Well, whoever doesn't get to the ALCS is probably going to do some house cleaning. They're going to be throwing some things out. They're going to get rid of some things that they had all season long as they clean out their lockers. And they should probably go to Vivia, just like I tell you to do as well. Why? Well, because Vivia does the things you don't want to do. It takes all the clutter and the garbage and the junk and the extra, whether you're doing a construction project and remodeling at the house or just cleaning out the attic in the garage, gets rid of it for you, and they can do it the same day. They have two sizes of dumpsters, a 10-yard and a 15-yard roll-off, and they fit comfortably in your driveway. They're attractive enough to keep your HOA away, and they'll take it away the same day. So, therefore, they do all the things in cleanup and garbage that you don't want to do and you don't have to. Five-star service, and like I said, the same-day delivery and pickup in Houston for houses can be done by project managers, too. There's a reason why Texas Custom Patios trust Vivia with their waste needs for their projects, because they get it done and they do it right the first time. From waste removal to business expansion projects, see why more contractors all over Houston are using Vivia. Vivia is the place to go to because they fit into tight spaces, minimal impact to your job site, and again, pickup and delivery same day. All you got to do is tell them you heard about it on ESPN 97.5. They're going to treat you extra special no matter what. GoVivia.com is where you need to go if you need a dumpster. GoVavia.com. That's GoVivia.com.
Ben, whatever neighborhood you're in. Gentle Ben, the union of tradition and invention.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Cody Stutes hanging out with us, one of the wheelhousemen. Jose Altuve was hitless in the ALDS. Jose Altuve. What's the concern level for Jose entering the ALCS, which will begin tomorrow?
Less than zero?
Less than zero.
Negative concern?
Really?
Never been more confident he's going to go on a streak and get some hits here?
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's Jose Altuve.
Sure. He's also hitless in the series in the ALDS.
0 for 16?
Are you more confident in Jose Altuve entering the CS or the DS?
Like from a week ago when they were entering the DS?
Yeah, coming off the hot end of the season, finished 3 for 3 to get his average up to 300.
Oh, I'm more confident heading into the CS. Jose Altuve just went 0 for 16. He's about to rattle off like 7 for 12.
Law of averages here?
Yeah.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, what's his performance going to be over the next few at-bats to get him up to 300?
I don't know. The math right there is fast.
You did go to UH, so.
Yeah, you went to Tech. That's why you're asking me.
Joel, you went to a school that teaches math. Can you do the math for us on that?
I'm just going to let you guys duke it out. I think people have more fun when that happens.
I like the philosophy here, though. Law of averages. What was he, 0 for 15 in the series?
I believe 0 for 16 was the actual.
Yeah, so he probably had 18. Yeah. Maybe, what does 7 hits do? 7 gets you to 7 for 23.
Look, no one thought he was going to get to 300 most of the season.
Maybe 6
hits
in a row?
Then when he did, they shut it down to make sure he did. But, I mean, he got there.
Yes, wow, that's a very good job by you. Seven out of 23 is a 304 batting average.
Can I tell you something that I've never said on the air before?
Okay, sharing time with Jeremy.
I almost majored in math.
Whoa, that would have been a total waste of time.
It was for like a semester. I don't know what I was thinking, because what do you do with a math degree? I almost majored in math.
You met Daryl Morey and thought that that was your path?
I don't know why. I don't know what got into me.
I
majored in math.
Definitely see Jeremy being one of the smug, nerdy guys in like a front office of a sports
team. Oh, no doubt.
Oh, I
can I let
totally
you know another secret?
That. Yeah.
This is probably my like top job that I would like to have. This one that I'm currently doing, play by play, talking sports in Houston. Like nothing would I wouldn't give that up for anything.
Uh-huh.
The second job though on that list. Major League Baseball general manager, without a doubt.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You guys be last place every year?
Good.
You should see how my fantasy expertise, I don't know, who knows. What was your dream job?
The mansions would be bigger
because
you'd be making more money in the front office of a baseball team.
Maybe not for long if I'm finishing last
every
year.
If you bad take Boulevard, you'd still be set for life.
Yeah, yeah. That was that's second on my like all-time dream bucket list that I would do. But this,
I'm so
this
glad
is a good
you're
first.
Not. I'm so glad you're not going to replace James Click.
I don't know, man. I think I could do a pretty good job. I really do.
Hey, if Easterby got work, you never know. There could be a job for Jeremy
I guarantee you that I – look, in baseball more than football, but I guarantee you that I could have done a better job as a GM than Jack Easterby.
Easterby and Branham LLC coming your way to save your franchise.
Hey, if it gets me if it pays the bills, if it pays the bills, you can find me at Jeremy Branham. What was your dream job, like, growing up? Like, oh. The one thing – is this it or was it playing football?
Professional wrestler.
Oh, that's right. I've already asked you this.
Oh, you like tights and spandex.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, I would have worn like pants.
Yeah, but you can't take bumps.
You don't have to wear the spandex. You can wear like the Undertaker never wore the spandex. I mean, he wore the spandex later, but there was a whole stretch where he didn't wear spandex.
So they weren't tights? They were just
tight.
Regular.
No, they're like
but
pants.
they weren't underwear.
Yeah. They weren't form fitting.
Okay.
Yeah. No.
You could wear shorts like John Cena.
Fellas like me shouldn't wear the form fitting gear when they're professional wrestlers.
Who is the Who is the wrestler that would be most close to the wrestler you would have been?
Oh, God, I don't know. I mean, I grew up in the Attitude Era, so I was big Stone Cold Steve Austin, The Rock.
See, I was thinking like Tugboat or Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
I would be Tugboat.
Oh,
yeah, he had like the piece of lumber like on his shoulder.
Yeah, the log.
Yeah, yeah. I could have maybe found my way into being the third member of the natural disasters. Certainly.
Earthquake,
typhoon, and hurricane.
Who was that dude when he went to WCW and he tripped? Was like Shockmaster
that? That was the gentleman that played Earthquake. His
I think it was the other guy.
Was it the other guy?
It was Earthquake, and who was the other guy?
Well, it was
the Shark dude.
He was. No, Shark was Earthquake.
It wasn't John Tetna. It was his tag team partner.
Oh, it was Tugboat?
It was Tugboat.
Gotcha.
Tugboat was the Shockmaster in WCW. What was your dream job, Blinkers?
I mean, to play.
Hanging out with me every day?
No, first and foremost,
Hooper?
To play. I mean, baseball or
baseball, basketball?
Okay. Baseball or basketball.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once it was unrealistic at the time to think that I didn't go to school for broadcasting, but I grew up my whole life listening to broadcasters, mm-hmm. to have it go the way it did to the career path that I've did with running the department to doing it to now doing this. I mean, it's perfect.
I love playing too, but I knew that I was going to hit an athletic wall whenever I was like 8 years old.
Yeah.
Like I knew at the age of eight that there was no chance of that happening.
Baseball, I had a good career to where there were always signs that were there was a chance until there wasn't.
And you were a lefty.
Yeah.
Like that helps.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And then after basically thinking it was over, and then taking a job with the Trailblazers in Portland, I had started to work out again because a buddy of mine was with the Indians and had shoulder issues. And then when they came to check on him, he had me throw for them.
Ooh.
And there was that one last sparkle of hope.
Ooh.
And boy, my dad tried to talk me into it. I was like, Dad, I'm working for a professional sports team. I can if I play my cards right and don't piss anybody off, I could have this for a lifetime. I'm not riding the small buses and short buses for one final go.
Yeah, you could have been in the minor leagues for 4 or 5 years and then gone right back to the bottom of the broadcast.
I don't know if that job would have been open again. So I took the path that was safer.
It's a good move by you.
It was a good move by you. Who do you want to see in the ALCS that begins tomorrow, by the way?
I initially was thinking, I'm fine with the Yankees. I'm fine seeing them. And that creates more storylines. Their fan base is more interesting. Yeah. The people that cover the Yankees are more interesting.
You're taking shots at Cleveland.
But that tubby fella that was running around the base paths looking like an idiot, I kind of want to see him. I kind of want him to hit a home run in like game one.
Naylor.
Naylor. Run around the bases like an idiot.
See if he's going to try and call someone else his son.
Yeah, and then just be awful for the rest of the series. I kind of want that. I mean, look, it's really going to be, You know, it's who wants to lose in six games? So,
you know. You're a loser if they win in five.
I found that out
that both of us did that.
I legitimately don't know.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know many Guardians players. Like, that is a team that has totally flown.
Their third baseman's pretty good.
Under the radar. Jose Ramirez. Yeah. I know him.
I wish you would have said that to me.
That is a team that just has flown totally under the radar to me all year long.
Shane Bieber's a stud. Yep. He could pitch on full rest twice. Tristan McKenzie's a stud.
Yeah, I know.
He could pitch on full rest twice. Class A is a dude in the back end of that bullpen.
Sure, yeah. I know, like, a few of those guys, but, like, I could roughly give you...
Hey, they
like,
got a center fielder right. You might know.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know a handful
no,
of
I know
the guys,
you do.
But I could basically give you the Yankees lineup.
Well, I was saying that because...
Like, I'm more familiar with them than I am the Guardians.
Well, I wasn't trying to, like, flex on you. I'm saying those are the reasons that the Guardians worry me. Like, that's the reasons that I'm going the Yankees, is because I think the Yankees are a better matchup than for the Astros than the Guardians are. Yankees are a better offense. Like, that's not arguable. But I believe that the guards are better for, like, a postseason perspective. Put the bat on the ball. Force you to play very good defense. They'll steal some bags. They'll play small ball. They try to put pressure on you. Where, like, the Astros pitching staff's power, they attack power hitters. We saw how that worked out with the Yankees in the regular season. And then the Guardians, they pitch unbelievable, especially with the dudes. And you don't have to worry about going deep into their pitching staff, which is what the Astros did in the regular season whenever they were able to get to them. Uh-huh. They play fantastic defense. And once the game gets to the bullpen, like the Astros, good luck scoring runs.
Yeah.
They're scary.
I don't care.
Team.
I'm not worried about the Guardians. Bieber, Justin, whatever. See ya. Tristan McKenzie.
Bob Costas now?
I mean, my fingers thicker than Tristan McKenzie.
That's
is.
Probably true.
But he also used his fingers and his arm and every bit of his pitching ability to shut down the Astros in the regular season.
Yeah, but I remember a couple years ago they rocked him, so I'm not worried about him. A
couple years ago.
Yeah, I'm not worried about him.
Yeah, that was then. This is now.
I mean, they're one of their best hitters is the Rock the Baby guy. Okay, see you later.
Their offense isn't good. Their offensive numbers compared
but
to the Yankees aren't there.
But when you go to Quantrill and you go to some of the guys, Plesak, some of the guys that they have.
How do you say that Karinchak's name? That dude's good too.
They got some
Domo
arms.
Santos, yeah. He can pitch.
Oh, hey, old Class A throws it real hard. Well, you know what happens when you throw it hard in? It goes hard out.
It's not just hard in, brother. It's hard and moves.
People forget Bregman didn't hit a fastball.
Hard 102. And moves.
Yeah. Hit 91.
I'm not worried about either of these teams.
Okay.
The teams that I'm worried
about.
That's
good, though. I like the confidence.
I hope you're right.
The teams that I'm worried about are already sitting at home.
This was your approach with Seattle, and it worked, so I wanted to continue. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse today?
Hypothetical Tuesday. For the first time in a month, BK is doing Hypothetical Tuesday.
First time that he's been here on a Tuesday?
Yeah, first time in a month for Hypothetical Tuesday, so we'll have that.
Wow.
Which NFL teams are about to panic, and... Jack Easterby being gone was at the top of a lot of Texans fans' wish list. What's at the top of the wish list now that he's gone?
Yeah, that's a good question. Thanks to Brendan working a day. It's nice for him to work for a day. Thank you for working and doing the hard work for a change. He's Blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A.
¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.